Cross Culture Podcast by
Global New Generation.
Tell the truth. Tell the truth. Well, you know what you done for me, you made me fall for you. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. Well, you know you can make me do what you want me to.
Welcome to our Cross Culture Podcast. So, today we are interviewing Mr. Tunyon from the International Labour Organization. Hello, Mr. Tunyon.
Can you maybe tell us more about your profession?
Sure. Thanks a lot. My name is Max Tunyon. I am the head of the ILO's office in Qatar. The ILO, or the International Labour Organization, is a United Nations agency. And we are unique United Nations agency in that our constituency, we are made up of three different bodies, the governments, as well as workers' organizations like trade unions, as well as employers' organizations. So representing the private sector in the employers, as well as workers, as well as governments. And the decisions that the ILO takes are taken by these three different bodies. And our job, our work is to support these partners, governments and social partners around the world to advance the decent work agenda and adopt and implement labor standards and labor legislation that is in line with international standards. I've been working in Qatar now for about 5 years. Personally, I've also worked in South Asia. And also in Southeast Asia and also in East Asia. So for the past 15, 20 years working with the ILO on migration issues in the Asian context.
Thank you for giving us this information. Okay, I'm going to start with the questions from the UN. So like I told you already, we are working on SDG 8. So I believe you're familiar with the Sustainable Development Goals planned by the United Nations. So can you tell us more about this goal, SDG 8? What does it mean?
So SDG 8 is about decent work and economic growth. And that means in practice, we need to ensure that everybody of working age has opportunities to grow and work in a safe, productive environment, free from discrimination, free from forced labor and child labor, that they're able to contribute to their own personal objectives, their personal ambitions, but also to the needs, meet the needs of their communities, their societies, their countries even. We see that around the world, SDG 8 and indeed many of the SDGs are struggling. We're behind in terms of meeting the objectives that were set. And just a couple of months ago in New York at the SDG summit, indeed, this was the message that was coming out loud and clear from the governments around the world and from partners around the world that we are falling behind. When we look at some of the statistics, labor-related statistics, at the global level, we know that, you know, of all of the employed population around the world, about 60% of them are in the informal economy, meaning they don't have access to basic social protections. About 4 billion people are exempt or excluded from any form of social protection. The ILO collects statistics on child labor and forced labor, and here also the figures are worryingly high. You know, there are 160 million children engaged in forced labor in 2020. There were 28 million people engaged in forced labor in 2021. And another shocking statistic at the global level is that, you know, each year there are an estimated 2 million workers who die as a result of occupational injuries and accidents in the workplace. So really these are alarming figures, and it's incumbent on all of us, you know, to make sure that more workers can find decent work in which they have social protection, in which their rights are protected. And indeed, they can contribute to the development of their communities and societies.
Mm-hmm. So I'll come to the next question. How does decent work contribute to our development?
So, I mean, the decent work is a means through which countries and communities and individuals can have a route out of poverty. So through their incomes, families, individuals are able to advance their opportunities and therefore have better access to a variety of development outcomes, whether that's better education opportunities, better health outcomes. We see a direct correlation between, you know, women in the workplace and gender inequality or equalities, tackling discrimination. So we really feel that SDG 8 is at the heart of many of these, or achieving many of these broader development ambitions, if more people are in decent work, if more people have access to decent incomes, then they can also lead themselves and their family communities out of the poor development outcomes related to education, health, etc. So that's why SDG 8 is so important, so central to the broader sustainable development agenda.
Why isn't decent work deficit stopped?
Why isn't there consistent action? And if there is action, what measures have been taken to reduce modern slavery in the context also of major events such as the World Cup?
I mean, I've highlighted a lot of the problems at the global level, and indeed in many countries and regions of the world, the picture is quite stark. But at the same time, there are positive developments. We see countries adopting new legislation or adopting international labor standards that will aim to tackle, you know, various challenges around the world of work, whether that's violence and harassment at work or improving labor inspection, safety and health, the rights of domestic workers, for example. These are all measures that are increasingly being adopted by many countries around the world to tackle those shortcomings, or what we call decent work deficits. So there are a number of positive developments. That's the role of the ILO, is to support governments and social partners in bringing about these changes. When you talk about forced labor, there is a lot that can be done around labor inspection, for example, building the capacity of complaints mechanisms so workers can lodge complaints, ensuring that people who are in forced labor have the access to justice and the right to remedy, whether that's through immediate support and protection in terms of shelters, but also recovering losses from that experience of being in forced labor. There are a whole variety of measures that can be taken to prevent and address situations of forced labor. And this forced labor can manifest itself in different ways in different contexts. In the case of Qatar, a lot has been done in the past 5 years to reduce workers' vulnerability to forced labor. At the heart of this has been reforms related to the kafala system, or the sponsorship system, which is a system through which labor has been managed in the Gulf region and in other parts of the Arab world for several decades. And basically, it's about tying one worker to one employer, and that worker is then dependent on that employer for not only their admission into the country, but also their stay in the country, their job. Even leaving the country is something that the employer has is responsible for. So these multiple dependencies create a vulnerability. And so in the past few years, we've been working with the government to introduce some reforms to the system that reduces that vulnerability and gives more power to workers. So firstly, this meant removing what we call exit permits. So before, a worker needed permission in order to leave the country. That's gone. And most importantly, workers have the ability to change jobs without permission from their employers. And that means that workers then have more power to negotiate for improved working conditions. And there is less of a power imbalance between the worker and the employer. In addition to that, there have been changes to the labor inspection system. Workers' access to complaints mechanisms have greatly improved. But we know that there's still, you know, a long way to go. And you were talking about major sporting events there, like the World Cup, for example. We really feel that this is a accelerator or maybe a catalyst that can help to advance, move things faster. But, you know, the work isn't done and the World Cup is not the finishing line. This work must continue into the future. And that is indeed what we're doing. We're still here in the country, in Qatar, supporting the government to ensure that these reforms are fully implemented and can reach all workers.
Mm-hmm. What does all this have to do with European countries?
Yeah, well, we live in a globalized world, and you can see that more and more legislation is being adopted around the world to ensure that companies take responsibilities for human rights within their supply chains and in their operations, regardless of where it takes place. So if you have a German company, you know, for years, they've had to comply with German labor law, but what happens when they have operations outside of Germany? How can those companies be held accountable for that? And so we've seen in the past few years legislation that's been adopted in different parts of the world that tries to hold or raise standards and expectations around human rights and due diligence in supply chains or ensuring responsible business conduct for these companies. So this is increasingly taking effect. And we can expect soon at the European level new legislation that will make very clear what is required of companies in setting out their measures or the steps that they're taking to ensure human rights are protected within their respective supply chains and within their respective actions that will have to be reported publicly. I think there is that kind of legislative angle, but also there is also reputational risks to companies who are not complying or carrying out such due diligence. And we've seen that many times, in many cases around the world, where, you know, through social media and through other and the traditional media, it becomes evident that certain companies are not aware of what's happening in their supply chains, and that has consequences in terms of their reputation and therefore, you know, their customer base. Mm-hmm. So I think indeed, you know, what happens in one country increasingly affects other countries as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you know if the World Cup, if they have changed their conditions for foreign workers in the country?
Yeah, there's been major changes in the past few years in the running up to the World Cup, and that has to and will continue going forward. We've seen many changes. You know, another example is the introduction of the minimum wage, which came into force in 2021. And that had a direct impact on about 13% of the workforce in Qatar. About 280,000 workers saw their wages increase. Other changes include, obviously in Qatar during the summer, it's a very hot climate and workers are at risk of heat stress. And so legislation was enhanced in Qatar to reduce workers' exposure to heat stress during those summer months and better protect those workers. So a number of changes have been brought about in a relatively short period of time, but I do also want to emphasize that this is still a work in progress.
Slavery actually has been forbidden worldwide, but we feel like during our research, we often stumbled across the word modern slavery. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. I mean, from the ILO side, we don't use the term modern slavery so much because it's not something that is found within our international labor standards or that we have clearly defined. The term that we use is forced labor, but I recognize that often these terms are used interchangeably, whether it's slavery, modern slavery, or forced labor, or trafficking even. Sometimes these words are used interchangeably. From the ILO side, we have conventions on forced labor. We have definitions of forced labor. We have programs on forced labor, where it's basically a worker who is carrying out work that they're not providing voluntarily. And for them to leave would incur a penalty. For us, that is the definition of forced labor. You have to meet these two criteria. And as I said, you know, around the world still today, there are 28 million people in forced labor, which is extremely alarming. And in different contexts, in different regions and countries of the world, you'll see that forced labor manifests itself in different ways. It could be bonded labor in South Asia. It could be forced marriage in another region. And as I said, in the case of the Gulf, a lot of the focus has been on the extent to which migrant workers are exposed to forced labor, particularly as a result of a kafala system that limits the power, particularly in relation to employers, and creates the opportunities for employers to take advantage of them without, you know, course for workers to either lodge complaints or without effective labor inspection systems. That's been changing now, I mean, around the world, including in Qatar. But we have to view these things also on a spectrum. And I think this is really important, that we don't kind of have a black and white definition of jobs being either decent or enforced labor. These should all be, these jobs can be placed on a spectrum where you have decent jobs and then poor working conditions, exploitative conditions, and then forced labor. Forced labor is really at the extreme, and so it's a rare event because, you know, in most cases, people who want to leave a job that they are not carrying out willingly will not face a penalty in the form of, you know, having their wages withheld or being subjected to violence or anything like that. So it is a rare event, but still 28 million people shows that this really requires a concerted effort.
Yes. The next question just popped in my mind, actually, did the corona pandemic any effects on all of this?
Yeah, I mean, corona affected us all. In 2020, we saw that it led to an unprecedented labor market crisis. And indeed, the recovery has been uneven and fragile in the past few years. So this kind of economic and social disruption has really threatened the livelihoods and the well-being of workers and their families around the world. I think every country in the world faced it. But as I said, the recovery has been uneven, where some countries have been able to bounce back faster. And also, it's been uneven in terms of certain populations being affected differently. Certainly in the early days of the pandemic, we saw that women were more affected by the crisis. And that's why responses really have to not only look at, you know, how do we get people back to work, but how do we get certain parts of the population who were disproportionately affected back into the workforce. So it's obviously been a huge disruptor, you know, and has affected not only the labor markets, but really all of the SDGs, and contributed to slowing down or reversing some of the gains that have been made in recent years. But it's not the only factor that has contributed to the gaps in terms of reaching the SDGs. You know, we see conflicts around the world. We see climate disasters and natural disasters also taking its toll.
is there a way for society to recognize more quickly if inhumane work is taking place? So for if I, like, for example, if I get my nails done or something, okay, is there a way, like, to recognize, okay, no, I shouldn't go to this place because there's work taking place?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. Like, what can individuals do in terms of being alert to situations of forced labor? And indeed, it's often hidden around us. There are sectors of work in which those workers are more vulnerable to exploitation. Whether that reaches the definition of forced labor or not, it's still an exploit. It could still be an exploitative situation. And I think it's important that we, you know, more people are aware of those risks and vulnerabilities that are particular to certain sectors. I am sure that within Germany and other countries, there are NGOs and government entities that are flagging and trying to raise awareness about what these particular sectors are and what individuals can do in terms of reporting this to the relevant authorities. I'm not familiar with those in Germany, but I can say, for example, in the UK, there is a body called the Gangmasters Licensing and Labour Abuse Authority. And they will, through their social media and other channels, you know, publicize hotlines. They will talk about particular sectors that are more likely to have forced labour in them. They talk about car washing, for example, or agricultural workers being a particular risk. Domestic workers, for sure, but vulnerability there. And so I'm not sure what the German equivalent of that is, but I'm sure there are bodies, government and non-governmental, that have this kind of communication through social media and other platforms. So I would encourage you to find out what those bodies are and circulate it through your networks, so that indeed when there are suspicions, these can be flagged to the authorities.
Okay. And what can I look out for? Like, what type of suspicion?
Well, we have a number of indicators of forced labor. Actually, the ILO has about a dozen indicators of forced labor. This includes issues around non-payment of wages, restrictions on mobility. If workers can't leave a particular workplace or in a particular, equates to forced labor. Just because one of those indicators is present, it doesn't mean that worker is in a forced labor situation. But as I said, it's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And then if you get a couple of these red flags, then it's definitely something that's worth reporting.
Okay, so how many of these red flags should be there?
There's no rule. I mean, it really, it depends. I mean, in situations where, you know, a worker's passport is being withheld, you know, we've seen cases where workers will say, ask the employer to hold on to their passport for safekeeping. Now, sometimes this can be genuine, and sometimes it's not really, the worker doesn't really have a choice. Mm-hmm. So you can't say, you know, definitively whether or not this is a forced labor situation. Mm-hmm. But it should make you think, it should make you stop and think and say, well, something may be wrong here. So we can't say that, you know, if there are three or four of these red flags that it's forced labor, but, you know, it could be one. Mm-hmm. In any case, it's good. It's a good tool through which people should be aware of what could be contributing to forced labor situations.
Okay. Thank you a lot for this information. Our last question is, in general, how can we help achieve the goals of SDG 8?
I think there's what the ILO does is to support, you know, throughout the life cycle, let's say, support youth employment or youth employment through training through proactive employment policies, ensuring that women and men and different marginalized groups have access to the labor market within communities. I think really highlighting the importance of education, of training, ensuring that, you know, people can have that successful transition from school and learning to work is really vital. And, you know, making sure that the support is available for young people to access jobs. But it really begins a lot of the time with education and training. It's not the it doesn't mean that with that you will be guaranteed to have a decent job throughout your career. We see that the labor markets are changing rapidly through different kinds of transitions, including the technological transitions, including the emerging green economy, for example. But ensuring that workers have access to training, the ability to reskill and adapt throughout their career is crucial. And I think this is something that Germany pays a lot of attention to and invests a lot in. And it's something that indeed it could share with other countries around the world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you a lot for this information. This helps us a lot. And do you want to give us some information that maybe you feel like is important that we know?
No, I mean, just to really thank you for reaching out. I mean, I think it's a great initiative, and the organization that you are part of, it seems like you are addressing a real need there. And from the UN, as a UN agency, you know, we really appreciate that the SDGs are not ours, they're not the UN's, they are all of ours. You know, they are for each government, for each community and society to take on board and advance through whatever means they can. You know, and whether you are a government policymaker or a student or an NGO or a retired person, you know, you can contribute to the achievement of the SDGs, because, you know, it's something that touches all of our lives. The SDGs will all touch all of our lives. And this one in particular, around decent work and economic growth, affects us all so deeply and is so central to achieving all of the rest of the SDGs that it's really important that there is more awareness among the wider community about these SDGs and why they're important. So I would really like to thank you for the initiative, and thank you for inviting me to come and share.
Thank you, thank you. This means a lot to us.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Das war Nelsie mit Complain Drill. Nelsie Dreege, aka Dreege on the Mic, ist ein Sänger / Songwriter und lebt derzeit in Norddeutschland. Nelsie ist auch ein Recording Artist, Beatmaker und Produzent. Er begann im Alter von 6 Jahren in der Grundschule zu singen und förderte weiter die Musik durch das Erlernen des Keyboards. Sein Einfluss auf das Schreiben war das Anhören anderer inspirierender Songs, die ihn dazu bewegten, seine Lyrics und seine Stimme in die Welt herauszutragen. Nelsie Dreege hat seinen eigenen einzigartigen Musikstil mit R&B-Melodien, Pop und Pidgin English Rap. Das war es mit unserem Cross-Culture-Podcast. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis bald.